Hey, Dub Dynasty fans, we got a new podcast, The Jep and Jess Show, with me, Jeff Roberts.
And me, Jessica. We'll be talking about our many passions, including faith, family, and everyday life.
So check out new episodes of The Jep and Jess Show every Wednesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.
The Walking Dead, Season 7, Episode 15 is still over, but we're just getting started. Taking your feedback here on The Walking Dead Feedback Show, and now here are two guys who know surprisingly little about beach ball-sized lady nuts. I'm Rob Cisterno here with Alex Kidwell. Josh Wigler is on assignment!
Yeah, Josh is out. He's got stuff to do, so enter the B-Squad. That's me.
All right, Alex Kidwell, that you just got back from a whirlwind East Coast trip, hitting a bunch of stops. How are you doing?
Yeah, such places as New York and DC, and that's it.
Yes, hey, that's one of the locations on The Walking Dead.
Yeah, hey, that's kind of true. Yeah, I was back home, but yeah, I could argue that I was checking out Rick and crew. Sure, let's go with that.
So it's a revolving door that last week I was out, you and Josh were in. On Sunday, you were out, Josh and I were in, and today we finish the round robin, and today Josh is out and you are in, but you and I have not had a chance to talk about this week's episode of The Walking Dead, so we'll get into that. Plus, we will take all of your feedback questions before we get ready for the Season 7 finale. A lot of hype coming in for the Walking Dead Season 7 finale. Do you get hype, Alex?
Yeah, I'm pumped for this. I'm energized. I feel like, you know, I've been a little bit pins and needles waiting for this to escalate and really ramp up.
Pins and Negans?
Pins and Negans, sure. And here we are. We're here. It's time. The time is nigh.
So we are ready to go, and this Sunday night is going to be that big finale show. And of course, we'll have another feedback episode for you guys afterwards, and then post-show recaps very quickly segues to talk Better Call Saul and even The Leftovers here in April, what should be a very busy April on the post-show recaps. All right. So Alex, of course, if people want to make sure they get all of those shows, they can subscribe to Post-Show Recaps. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Back in the star ratings. All those shows have their own separate iTunes feeds as well. So, Alex, give us your thoughts on this Sunday night's episode. I think I was a little higher on it than Josh was.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I thought, you know, one of my main criticisms with this show has been, why do we have so many hour plus long episodes that only stay in one central location and don't really bounce around? They bounced around this time. They gave me what I've been asking for. So I can't have too much issue with it. I like Josh's take that he, you know, started with kind of last week and added on this week, where this is almost like the second hour of a 3-hour finale. It does feel like an extended story over the last couple of weeks that really is you know, it's all one big kind of chapter book, but this really does feel like, you know, one larger final chapter over these last couple of weeks. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think each one's gotten a little bit better. And I think next week it should be a pretty good, like, hopefully level one Walking Dead episode.
We hope so. I do think it's interesting that in this back half of Season 7, they have kind of abandoned a trope that they have done for the last few years on The Walking Dead, where basically, you know, you get people all together, like maybe in the first episode, in the second episode, maybe again at the 7th and 8th episode. But, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 is a lot of standalone episodes of just like one or two characters. We really haven't had that at all this season. We had an episode where we were just seeing what was going on with people in the kingdom, with sort of like a Carol and Morgan mostly standalone episode with all those characters there. But we haven't had like an episode where it's just like two characters, like a Maggie and Enid just on the road together episode.
Is that what you're waiting for? The Maggie and Enid comedy?
No, that's what I don't like when they do that. So I feel like they've done a really good job of mixing things up here in the back half of Season 8.
Yeah, yeah. Maggie and Enid's Excellent Adventure.
I don't even think we've had one episode where, you know, we had another episode that was just at the sanctuary, but there was a lot going on there with Dwight and with Negan and with Eugene and, you know, Eugene coming to the sanctuary and that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And Rick and Michonne. own, sort of were off on their own thing, but there were other things going on in that episode. So, you know, we have not gotten, you know, just like Daryl and Beth in a cabin, an episode this half season.
Yeah. You know, a lot of characters advance their narratives slightly. And I think I prefer that better to a few characters advancing their narratives heavily. You know, we get a little bit of like, you know, that scene with Gregory and Maggie where he's got the knife and he's inching closer to her, like, oh boy, that's tense. What's happening here? So it's each of these, you know, dynamics that we show there. It's all escalating. It's all building here.
And I've talked about how, you know, I prefer like the, Game of Thrones model where at least, you know, we're sort of like, I call it like the NFL red zone where it's like, okay, let's go around the league and let's see what's going on here. Let's see what's going on here. Let's see what's going on here. But it's not just like 1 hour of only things happening in one place. So I like that they've done that less here in the back half of season 7.
Yeah. As an NFL red zone fan, I can definitely support this analogy.
Yeah.
Speaks to my attention span.
All right. What in particular did you want to touch on after this week's episode from, you know, the first time you were getting a chance to talk about it?
It's interesting. I think this is something where, you know, you and Josh brought it up. I think Josh wants to pull Mole Patrol out of retirement. I think this idea that Negan knows what Rick's up to, how much does he know? How does he know what he knows? This is like the big shoe that still has to drop because Rick, a move is going to be made surely in this finale. But to what degree Negan has already prepared some kind of like counter plan, I think, is really the lingering issue here. And what's, you know, when push comes to shove, like who's really outsmarted who? Who's got the other one? Negan might know something, but, you know, what's Dwight's role in all this? Is Dwight actually wanting to switch sides, and does that give Rick and them the upper hand? It's interesting. I mean, it's kind of a war of information, and you know, Negan seems to potentially be armed with the mole. Rick has the walkie-talkie, which gives him some insight. He has maybe Dwight now, so it's going to be interesting to see who really gets the jump on who.
Do you have a theory on who the mole could be? Was it a mole that was digging up the garden in the kingdom? Was that the problem? Why they had to get rid of all the crops?
Yeah. Well, you would think Shiva would be, you know, good. Yeah, the weevil. But you would think Shiva would be good at, you know, keeping pests, like at least mammalian pests out of the garden. It seems like they're just the smell of a tiger you'd think would keep moles away.
I mean, I can't imagine it's anybody in our main roster that's the mole. Obviously, not Daryl, not Maggie, not Carl, not Michonne, not Carol, not Morgan, not Sasha, not Tara. Not Rosita, not Father Gabriel, right?
Yeah, no, you know me. I think Father Gabriel's the man. I think he's really, he's come along. I was so proud to hear you defend Father Gabriel to Josh on the show this week because, man, we've come a long way, Rob.
Yeah.
We really have.
So I don't know who the Negan's mole could possibly be if there actually is one out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got some feedback this week. We've got a couple comments that I think are speaking to a theory you had. Rob Craig says, Negan mentioned to Sasha how a little birdie told him Rick was planning something. I'd have guessed it to be Gregory, but since he hasn't met Simon for the happy hour yet, it has to be someone else. I'm thinking it has to be the garbage people, because who else can it be?
Oh.
And Vicky says, I think the mole is Jadis. Never trusted that group. I could be wrong, but I think the garbage people seem to be into Rick's plan without asking any questions about who the saviors are. So this is something you had brought up during the show. I thought maybe it was just kind of based in your dislike of Jadis and the garbage people more than
well,
any actual concrete proof.
Well, you know what they say. You lay down with garbage people, and you wake up with covered in garbage.
Yeah, you are what you associate with or what you live in, I guess. That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is an option.
But yeah, I mean, these are good points. It's like we don't know anything really about these garbage people other than the one overlying trait that they are, in fact, garbage people. I mean, we don't know where they came from. We don't know how long they've been there. We don't know like what they consider their turf. We don't know if they've encountered the saviors and they're capable of playing dumb. I mean, this is they're a bit of an X factor. And you would think, you and Josh talked about it, but like, why wouldn't you swap them out for the Oceansiders if you could? And it's like, well, yeah, with Oceanside, at least you know definitively these people hate the saviors. They've got reason to want to fight the saviors and never work with the saviors. But like Jadis and crew, who knows where their motives lie?
Nobody knows. I mean, what do the garbage people even want other than guns?
Yeah. You know, cleaner, fresher garbage.
I don't know. They're very content to live among the garbage. So I don't know necessarily what their end game is in terms of being the garbage people. But We haven't seen any relationship of Negan with the garbage people. What could the garbage people have that Negan would want, even if he was going to take half of their stuff? And what does he even want their garbage?
I don't even want that.
I don't even like that garbage, okay?
Yeah, you keep that. You keep that and your buddy Winslow. I don't need any of this.
And you could take half of my garbage and get it the hell out of here.
Yeah. Although Winslow would be right at home at Eugene's like moat that he's building.
Yes.
Over there. That guy fits right in.
That would be good. You know, normally Josh and I talk about The Talking Dead, and it was a weird week on The Talking Dead. Did you get a chance to watch it?
I did not. No, fill me
so
in.
It was on after Into the Badlands.
Right.
So it was on an hour later, and sort of like a top-heavy panel and then a very bottom-heavy panel where Maggie and Tara were both there in the studio, which was exciting because when you have Laura Cohan, one of the principals there, and Tara, Alana Masterson, very good. But then they called them like super fans, that they were there to be the ultimate Walking Dead fans.
Oh, dear.
They had Rick and Michonne cosplayers who are actually dating.
Oh, boy.
On the couch. On the couch the whole show.
Wow. This is, they win a contest or?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they won a contest and they were talking to them like first segment. Like this seems like, you know, a fourth segment thing. Like, okay, let's check in with the cosplayers. All right. They're Rick and Michonne. They're really dating. Here they are. Why we had to hear what they thought about the episode. Who the hell cares?
Yeah, this is like, you know, people in Survivor finales, people get frustrated when Jeff Probst even, you know, consults the people on the street or the members of the audience. But this would be like if he just invited them up on stage and had them there the whole finale.
You know, we proved a week or two ago, like, oh, we could get Lenny James on Skype. Like, you know, the world is our oyster in terms of talking Walking Dead. Why we needed to hear so much from who cares what a Michonne impersonator thinks?
Well, you know, I'm sure they care and their family cares. And their friends care, but right, I don't know that this is the direction the Talking Dead needs to go. Maybe they figured that, you know, after Into the Badlands, everyone's kind of checked out anyway.
Yeah, and then Chris Hardwick was like, hey, if you guys want to get married, I'll marry. And they were sort of like nonplussed about the whole idea. Like, I don't know why they were even there.
Chris Hardwick's an ordained deacon?
Yeah, I guess he would be.
Who isn't anymore? It's everybody.
I thought that was a bad use of screen time on The Talking Dead this week to get involved with the Rick and Michonne impersonators.
Father Gabriel Hardwick.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get back to the voicemails and the feedback. What else did people want to ask us?
Let's go to this voicemail from Kyle Switzer, because I think this is it's an interesting question. It's something that maybe is pertinent to our takes over the last few weeks.
Lately, Josh has been so down on the show that I feel like it's bled into Rob and Alex both being down on the show probably more than is fair. One of the big criticisms has been that the show has done these individual episodes about each character. And I think that this week was really awesome the way that they bounced from three storylines and kept us up to date on all three. And I think it made for a really great episode and a really great podcast afterwards. I was wondering what your thoughts were on if this is the best version of The Walking Dead when they're doing things like this, and if you think they'll continue this trend. Thanks, guys.
Well, Kyle, I definitely agree with you on your point. And we even opened the show talking about this, about how, like, I like when we're using the ensemble as opposed to just having an episode where you walk away with it like nothing happened. This was all we got was, you know, 90 minutes on Tara at Oceanside. I think that it is much better when they bounce around. I think that, Alex, you agreed with that earlier in the show. To just speak to the earlier point, you know, is Josh making us down on the podcast? I mean, I feel like if anything, I'm up on The Walking Dead this half season. I feel like I've been the first half of season 7, I think I was higher on it than some. I definitely feel like that there are certainly people that are higher on it than me, but I feel like that I was more down about this show, I think, at different points in season 6, Alex.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, and I think, yeah, this is really what I wanted to get into, this idea.
I love Negan.
Yeah, Negan, I think me and you are particularly high on Negan.
Yeah, that said, okay, there's too much Negan. Yeah. I know that was a complaint of the show in season 6.
Right.
I just get down on when we spend too much time with characters that it's like, who cares about them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or your entire episodes. And yeah, I mean, to Kyle's point, I think that's something that we all, you know, appreciate when this show is taking the time to do. But yeah, I really wanted to address this idea of like, is Josh's negativity infectious? Because I think it's funny and it's interesting, but ultimately, yeah, I think probably unfair, because I think me and you have been mostly positive relative to a lot of the takes, certainly that I've seen. I know there are some people who have been very pro Walking Dead, and those are probably the people that are never going anywhere. You know, they're mm-hmm. always going to love this show, this content.
Yeah,
and
there is
fine.
A base. There is a base of The Walking
the
Dead
base.
That
that's
no matter
cool.
what they did on the show, short of killing Rick and Daryl,
yeah.
that they're going to, you know, be, you know, supporting it 200%.
Yeah, and that's fine. And but I think, you know, when we've been critical, I think it's been warranted. I think, you know, when the people are speculating if that's a CGI spaceship behind Rick at the
oh,
dump.
Yeah.
Like there's certain things that are fair, I think, to pick at. But in terms of, you know, the general show, yeah, I mean, I've certainly been more, you know, the time we're in the woods between the prison and Alexandria, I was certainly I was having a much harder time staying along with this and really enjoying it. I think where we are now, at least for me, is very interesting because, you know, it's almost a little – it's getting a little Game of Thrones-esque with these varying factions now. You know, that's mm-hmm. something that really hadn't been explored in Walking Dead. The world is getting bigger. Like now that they've got their feet under them and they don't have to live day to day worrying about attacks, which was, you know, the early part of this show, we're getting to a point where it's like, okay, now we can like begin to see like the map and expand the map. And it's almost like we're rediscovering civilization again. It's a very slow process. You know, Negan and his Mongol horde or something, you have to – the barbarians. You have to clear out before you can build a city. That was always true in old times, but I like where this is going. I really do.
If I've had two major gripes with season 7, the aforementioned garbage people and Carl and Enid roller skating. I think that those are my two things that I've really, you know, taken the show to task for. Maybe the CGI deer also. But other than that, I think I've been, you know, pretty overall positive on this show.
Yeah, well, you know, when they finally defeat Negan and life is peaceful again, Carl and Enid can start they can start the first hilltop roller derby team, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What else do people want to know?
Here's a question that I thought, obviously, I don't think is a serious question, but I think is a funny thought. Mike Fleck asking if the ship that opened the show was possibly the Abigail. I did like how there's this ship that's wrecked there. And we've got this, you know, this throwback to Fear the Walking Dead, which always had this ship in the intro. I like this idea that, you know, certainly it was too big. There's a lot of really old Pirates of the Caribbean-esque zombies coming off of it. But the Abigail. Rob, I miss the Abigail.
The Abigail. That boat looks pretty big to be the Abigail. I don't think that the Abigail is quite – that looks more like a tanker.
It was like an ocean liner. Yeah.
Yeah. What happened to the Abigail?
It's a good question.
Did it get stolen?
Yeah, I think somebody
took
it. They go back to the location where it's supposed to be and it's not
the
there.
The Abigail
I don't
is
know if,
missing.
Yeah, Strand's like – did you leave the keys in the glove box? Wait, I don't know why there'd be a glove box necessarily, but, you know, maybe boats have glove boxes. What do I know?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay, let's take this question from Rob Craig, just in terms of what we can maybe expect from the finale. With the finale coming up, we're bound to have some casualties. At the beginning, I thought Simon would be going in this episode, but fortunately, it seems he'll be sticking around. Taking Sasha off the board, who do you think is likely to go? Eric has had a visibility spike, so I like his chances of going, but who do you guys think is toast? And do you think Shiva is going to be unleashed on the Saviors?
Shiva being released as the Saviors. That's a good call.
Yes.
I like that.
I
feel like I've been
too.
Hearing like a lot of hype from people around the show. And again, I don't know why I always fall for this. I always listen to what they say and then try to read something from it. But I feel like I'm hearing so many different articles between people saying this is the best episode we've ever written. People are going to be so excited after this episode. There's no level of hyperbole that the Walking Dead cast and crew does not put out there. But, you know, and they never say, oh, maybe we should downplay it. Maybe we should have low expectations. they're talking about this episode like, oh, it's going to be so great. It's going to be so huge. And the most wonderful episode. So I got to think that we're going to be getting some sort of losses for the Saviors.
I think Eric is a good call. I like that one. We saw Eric this week. I've talked about how I feel like Eric is he doesn't really fit. He's kind of a busted leg on this Alexandrian centipede that keeps moving forward. He's not really providing anything.
But will you be sad for Aaron?
I guess, but Aaron's a tough guy. I mean, he'll soldier on. I'm confident.
I don't care about Eric, but I don't want anything bad to happen. I don't want Aaron to be bummed out.
Yeah, that's fair. Aaron's
been through a lot.
Seems like a nice guy. None of our favorites would have found Alexandria if not for Aaron's goodwill and, you know, just deciding to take a chance on these guys.
So. Yeah, I still can't believe that worked out, that he wasn't just like, the only nice person they ever met.
Yeah, it's a low percentage move in this day, you would think. I'm surprised that he lived long enough to find these people. But and then as far as the Shiva thing goes, like you said, I think it's a very good call. I don't think you just throw a completely house trained tiger into the mix in this show unless sometime in the immediate future it's going to be tearing apart some zombies and or some saviors.
Yeah. Talk to me about Sasha. Things look bleak for Sasha on like a number of levels, right?
Well, not on the Enterprise or whatever she's bound
right.
for, but
the
yes.
Odyssey.
The Odyssey, yes, of course.
We've been talking about casting rumors for her potentially leaving the show all season long. She is now captured by the Saviors. She has now been given suicide pills. Do you have a prediction for what goes on with Sasha?
It's interesting because you and Josh were talking about it, and I think I had a different take on her reaction to the pill than you guys did. Because, like, you know, you're talking about how she smiles in that moment, and I was thinking that was like an exasperated smile. Like, she was really wanting some kind of weapon, and Eugene, like, and she was trying to trick Eugene into giving it to her, and Eugene ends up giving her the pill, and she's like, oh, friggin' Eugene, like, of course. Like, that was the smile that I thought I saw. So it's interesting that they gave us so little there that there's many ways you could interpret it.
Oh, no, that is not what I've heard at all. At the David Healy tweeted to me and Josh, I thought The Walking Dead made it as clear as possible without saying it. Sasha doesn't really want to kill herself.
Yeah, well, I don't think she does. Right. I think that's the point. I think she wanted a weapon so she could like do something when Negan opens the door. I think she's asking for what she thinks Eugene might be willing to give, which is, you know, something for her to use on herself, but that's not her plan. But then with the pill, it's like, right, what can she possibly do with that? So I thought that was her just being like angry at Eugene, but also like just kind of lamenting her luck in the moment that things just can't seem to, she can't seem to catch a break here.
No, I mean, I don't think that Sasha is going to take the pills and commit suicide. I don't know if that's the impression I gave on Sunday night. I believe what I said was that I don't believe that The Walking Dead sends off one of their principal cast that's not a hero's death to commit suicide.
Yeah, well, certainly with the pill. Like, that's, yeah, and I definitely agree with you there.
And I was talking about Chekhov's tequila, even.
Yeah, and I think that that was interesting. I think if you give her, like, rusty glass or something, then it becomes more ambiguous, like
rusty glass.
Well, she was asking for all kinds of, like, just give me anything sharp, you know, I don't care what it is. And I think at that point it's like, okay, well, maybe if you give her a weapon, like, maybe this is more of a, you know, badass way to go out. But right, once it's the pill, I don't think we can possibly think that this is going to be the way she goes. I mean, the Leroy Jenkins mention was had me in tears. I thought that was fantastic. That's exactly what it was. I mean, she just runs in there half cocked. What a drastic turn to go from that to just like offing yourself.
Guess
no, I can't
myself.
Imagine that. No, can't possibly see that happening. Leroy would never do that.
He would not. All right, before we get to more of the listener questions, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at True Car, because when you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. You don't want to be getting fake pricing news from anybody. Unfortunately, a lot of times this isn't the case. People configure their cars online only to find out later that the car and the price they thought they were getting was not available. But with with TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory, not pricing just offered by TrueCar, pricing offered from an actual dealer, and not just any dealer, a TrueCar certified dealer, a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. You know, Alex, the saviors, they are all about non-transparency. You never know what you're doing with them. You make a deal with them, they change it, they take a doctor from you. That is really the epitome of the opposite of what you want to be dealing with.
That's true. Really wasteful with their cars too, making, you know, moats and all kinds of obstacles with them.
Terrible, terrible. Yeah. But not with TrueCar, because they help you easily find the car that you want. They will show you what other people in your area, whether it's the Kingdom, whether it's Alexandria, the Sanctuary, Oceanside, wherever you live, they'll show you what people are paying for the same exact car you're looking for, so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, with over 13,000 dealers nationwide, and TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right, what else did our listeners want to discuss?
Well, Rob, I had a thought, and I wanted to get your opinion on this here.
Hit me.
You know, last week we have Sasha telling Rosita they need you, and you know, I think the initial question, at least that I had, was, isn't Sasha the best shot in the group? I think the fact that now this week we see Michonne with the sniper rifle missing people, doesn't this speak to how important Sasha is?
Sasha's super important. That was the dumbest decision ever to... I mean, Rosita, yes, okay, she can do a bunch of things. I guess she was sort of like the
demo
explosive
expert, yeah.
expert in the beginning of the episode. But I think that she has, you know, very limited job functions. I mean, in the Walking Dead universe, do you think that you are better off with a person who has a very specialized skill set, or somebody that's sort of more of a jack of all trades? I think the jack of all trades is more useful.
Yeah, I just don't see a scenario where your best plan of attack for almost any situation isn't a sniper in a tree somewhere. Like, that just seems like such an ideal. You call Negan out for a confrontation, and then all of a sudden, like, whoa, people are going down, and I don't know where the shots are coming from. Like, how is that not the play?
Yeah, seems like a good move, but you know that they told Negan, or Negan was going to go and be with his wives, and Eugene said, hey, Negan is going to be indisposed, so that's it. Sasha said, forget about that, I got to go inside and try to take the shot.
What do you think about the juxtaposition between Negan killing rapey Davey and then also having these wives that want to kill him?
I don't know if that's necessarily a... It didn't jump out to me as a juxtaposition. Like, okay. I got the sense that, I mean, Negan, while he is sort of forcing, you know, women to marry him, I you know, don't get the sense that he is treating these wives poorly, other than he is like holding them captive. He is providing for them. He is like giving them a home. They seem to be able to, if they want to live that lifestyle, be able to do whatever they want, you know, food, drink, but they have to be in his concubine. But I don't think that he is, you know, if he is sensing resistance, again, it's more of like a mental anguish, probably, more than anything. But I don't think he is physically forcing himself on people.
Yeah, it seems like there's a choice there, right? Like, it's not a great choice he gives you.
Right. There is a worse job you could have.
Walker duty on the wall, or... Yeah.
Right. If you choose to not be one of Negan's wives, if you are going to, you know, be a buzzkill for Negan, then you can go out and work in, like, the pit of walkers out there. So,
yeah.
Is it much of a choice? I'm not sure. But I think that for Negan, in his mind, he is looking for women who want to opt into this lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's the distinction there.
And certainly it is not too hard to squint and say, okay, well, hold on, then that's not really much of a choice. And if it's not much of a choice, then they are there against their will.
Yeah.
But there does not seem to be any domestic violence going on between Negan and his wives.
And I think maybe it speaks to kind of that, you know, we know a lot about Negan now. We certainly don't know this guy's backstory, which I think is, you know, could potentially be interesting to find more about. But I think one thing we've figured out about Negan seeing is that maybe, you know, he's not necessarily completely vindictive or malicious. I mean, certainly he could have killed a lot more people at times and in anger if he had wanted to, but he doesn't. I think maybe this guy is just like he doesn't really get it all the way.
Oh, that's what you think.
He sees things through his own personal lens, and I don't think he's necessary. I think I wonder if he was made to, you know, understand other people's perspectives better, if he might be like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Like he's this very interesting kind of enigma where at times you think maybe he is just very, very ruthless and not something you can negotiate with. And then other times you're like, wow, Eugene's getting away with stuff, like suggestions to this guy. So it's very curious now. The more we learn about Negan, the more interested I am.
I don't know if Negan's necessarily the, you know, chess master.
Yeah.
You know, I think he has pretty simple, like a way that he looks at the world. And it's just like, you know, you have stuff and now it's mine.
And I'm going to make life at the sanctuary as good as possible. So, you know, we're going to take everything from you, but hey, come join us. We've got the cardamom gelato. We've got all this stuff. Just work for me and you're good to go. I think in a way that's him trying to maybe do the right thing. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know that everything Negan does is purely for Negan. I think there is an element of him looking out for his people, and that, you know, speaks to why in part many people follow him. Of course, a lot of people just follow him, I think, outright out of fear, but there's more here than meets the eye, which is interesting.
With Negan.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And then, yeah, of course, with the whole Simon and Gregory thing, obviously, I guess, you know, that's going to come to a head next week. Gregory's making his trip with Cal, his right-hand man that I don't think we've seen before, his driver.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm very curious to see where that goes, because I think Gregory, at this point, you know, he sees the writing on the wall. Like, and even what, you know, Maggie is even revealing his secrets to people. They're like, oh, he's learning. He's learning to kill zombies. It's his first time. Well, that's not what he told us. Like, oh, damn it, Maggie. Like, are you going to blow up my spot? So it's interesting. I could definitely see Gregory making a move against Maggie sometime in the near future.
So, but it's not going to be a successful move. So what happens? Does Gregory, you know, end up like trying to kill Maggie and she kills him? What do you think?
I could see that happening. I could see him. I don't think he wants to relinquish control of the Hilltop in any way, shape, or form. So if he's going to Gregory, it's not to like join the Saviors so much as try to enlist help or get ideas. Gregory, to me, he's very underhanded. He's very conniving. I mean, that move with the knife, I was really worried there because that strikes me as his MO. He's just going to hit you from behind. He's a bit of a coward, this guy. He's not going to, you know, look you in the eyes when he does something. So I don't think Maggie knows to be watching her back, but boy, yeah, scary. I think probably the most likely is some kind of half-cocked assassination attempt, if I had to guess.
Okay, so where do you want to go next?
Let's talk about Oceanside for a little bit. So Spencer has a question. Despite Natanya's insistence that none of the Oceanside women take part in the war against the Saviors, do you think they'll end up playing a heroic role and turn the tide in the fight? In a Game of Thrones analogy, if the fight against the Saviors is a single event like the Battle of the Bastards, do you see them rolling in like the Knights of
with
the Vale?
What? I mean, like, oh my God, it's 200 women in burlap. They're here and they've got clubs. Look yeah. out, Negan. Ho, where did all these women without guns come from? Ho, Lucille does not like surprises like that.
I think it'd be one thing if we saw that they had, like, you know, a really nice, like, stable and a bunch of horses over there. And maybe they come in with spears on a horseback or something. But short of that.
Hold on. Is that a catapult filled with flounder?
Yeah,
oh, right. I just got hit with a fish.
All these perch. We don't know what to do with ourselves.
Yeah, what are they going to do?
Yeah, that's the problem, right? We've just literally stripped them of their one real asset. I mean, they've got a few willing, able people, but short of weaponry, I don't know what role they potentially play. I mean, other than if they showed up at Alexandria ahead of time, you know, certainly they can bolster the ranks, but as like a latecomer to the fight, yeah, I don't know what they're doing unless they've got like slings with rocks in them or something.
Mm-hmm.
Bows and arrows or something. Get real medieval here.
It'd be interesting to see. I just think we have so many moving pieces. We have the kingdom.
Yes.
We have Alexandria. We have the garbage people. We have the Hilltop. Do we need another community of people to be part of this battle that have nothing?
Yeah, well, It depends on how useful the garbage people are, I suppose. But no, with their guns, we've got what we need. We don't need these people. So we can flip off Rachel as we walk away like Tara does.
Yeah.
Screw you, Rachel. We're taking your guns.
Yeah, I could see the little girl being a part of something in true like Wicket Ewok fashion, like throwing like a boulder from like a tree and like knocking out one of the saviors.
Yeah, I like that little girl. She seems tough. But why are her cheeks always dirty?
Yeah.
Somebody wash that little girl's face.
Yeah, they may not have like a ton of like Purell on hand at the Oceanside.
They're Bayside. They need to get on that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they do have a large body of water that they could, you know, freshen up.
Yeah. Here's a question from Rob Craig, bouncing around a little bit. Is Maggie still supposed to be pregnant? She looks slimmer than she ever has, and Judith is going to be 5 feet tall before the kid's even born. I've kind of noticed this, too.
Yeah, just to go through, like, how much time has passed.
Yes, let's do that.
Maggie, I think the reveal that Maggie was pregnant was, I believe, the start of season six, right?
Yeah, I don't think it was. Yeah, not that much time that Glenn got to like be aware of the possibility he might be a father before.
Right,
no more Glenn
dies in this season premiere. So I'm trying to think of like, was there that big time jump that happened in between the like when Jesse's kids got killed? That whole thing where the horde invaded Alexandria.
Yeah,
because all that happened, like there was a big time jump, right? Like, so that it's the beginning of season six where Maggie and Glenn are talking about how Maggie is pregnant. That's when Glenn goes under the dumpster still. He comes back to Alexandria. The horde attacks Alexandria. Big time jump when Rick and Michonne fall in love. So what was that? At least like 6 weeks at that point. Then the whole back half of season six happens. And then the entirety of season six. Seven happens. I know the entirety of season seven is probably only like maybe 2 or 3 weeks tops, but
you think she'd be showing?
They could argue a point where she's 3 months pregnant now. So you could say it's possible that she's not. I don't think it's just like, but I mean, how many seasons of The Walking Dead are we going to do in this short period of time?
No, yeah, I'm thinking maybe it doesn't matter. I feel like by the premiere of next season, like the kid's born or something.
By that logic, then, I mean, Carl and Judith have grown like 10 years in that time.
Yeah, Judith, especially.
So the Judith logic is really throwing things off. So go back and look at a picture of Judith from the start of season six and look at Judith now. Judith has somehow aged. You know, she went from like a 9 month old baby till now she's 4.
Yeah. Negan's like, Judith, now you're big enough. You shave me and then shave yourself.
Whoa.
That's how big she's got.
Oh, there's a hole in the space-time continuum around here. What is going on?
Yeah, I could definitely see this being one of those things that gets usked over, where Maggie doesn't look pregnant, and starting next season, surprise, baby's around. It's happened. We missed it.
Now, in terms of Gregory in his plot to kill Maggie, and I don't know if this is like one of these things where it's like, duh, yeah, of course that's what he's going to do. But, I mean, the Saviors don't know Maggie is at the Hilltop. Wouldn't the easiest move just be for Gregory just to tell the Saviors Maggie is at the Hilltop, and then they'll come and get her?
Yeah, you would think so. Because, Gregory does know that Maggie's been hiding from them, even if and they were looking for her.
Or is it the kind of thing where Simon is like, Gregory, you were lying to us. You shouldn't have, been holding out on us. Now we have to kill you. Sort of like when Spencer tried to rat out Rick to Negan.
Yeah, traditionally not good for these sycophantic yes men who try to pull a fast one like that and actually, you know, double back on a move that. Yeah, I mean, right. Like, it's backward savior logic again, where they kill the...
they don't like rats.
The people who are trying to get in with them, and they keep around the people that are trying to resist them. Very
yes.
Interesting.
They're going to flip anybody who hates them. They try to, like... I guess they really like reverse psychology.
Yeah, and actually, that leads into a voicemail from Matt Sig here that we have. So let's get into that.
Hey, guys. I got a couple of Negan questions for you. The first one is, if Negan really does know that Rick is planning some sort of rebellion, wouldn't his best course of action be to go to Alexandria and Lucille Rick to death? Seems like that would put a stop to anything. But my second question is he not doing that because he does have a mole in there somewhere and he knows exactly what they're planning? Could the garbage people be working for Negan in some capacity, because they didn't seem all that surprised about him, and they didn't seem to be all that believable or trustworthy. So, just curious what you guys think. Thanks a lot.
Oh.
Yeah, nobody trusts the garbage people.
The garbage people are going to take you out, Rick.
But yeah, I'm curious by this idea. I mean, Rick has really just been a serious thorn in Negan's side every step of the way. I mean, Negan really, I think, has to put extended time and energy into, you know, keeping tabs on this guy. Why does he put up with all this? Why did he just, like, get rid of Rick and put someone more amenable, like a Eugene, in charge over there? Why do you think he doesn't do that?
I've been saying this for years, that he needs an ambassador for, I mean, not for years, for really since the start of season 7. Like, Negan needs an ambassador. There's all this stuff going on under his nose. Why doesn't he install somebody at the kingdom, at Alexandria, at the hilltop, instead of just, like, showing up like my landlord used to in college? Like, hey, what's going on here? Well, there's a lot of beer bottles. You guys drink it in here? What's going on? What? No.
That's a terrible landlord. They're supposed to give you 24 hours notice. But yeah, no, I think it's a fair question. I think this really, again, speaks to kind of why some of the things Negan does doesn't seem to make sense. All I can figure is that from what we've seen, Negan really admires and respects Rick on like a strange, like probably hazardous to his health kind of level. Like, certainly Rick has done enough to this point where you'd think Negan would have, you know, the juice is not worth the squeeze to keep this guy around. But for some reason, Negan seems to think that Rick is important to whatever he wants to do in the future, that Rick is a valuable provider going forward, that Rick is going to be integral to the new world under Negan, the new world order that he wants to establish. So it's interesting. I mean, he wants to keep his enemy very, very close. We have to assume it's going to come back to bite him in some fashion.
All right. Well, we will be back on Sunday night. We will have this week's finale, and then we'll be back with another feedback show. So get your questions into us either via email, twd@postshowrecaps.com, or go to postshowrecaps.com/twd iTunes for our Walking Dead podcast feed. What do you like?
You know, we spend a lot of time talking about Mole Patrol. It's such a, you know, it rolls off the tongue so nicely. Josh isn't here, but I, you know, we'll give him the shout out. Why don't we use that?
Okay, we'll start the hashtag Mole Patrol to get ready for finding out who is the backstabber among the group. All right, Alex, anything else you want to mention? You got another podcast coming up this week?
Yeah, we just actually, me, Josh, and Kevin Mahadeo just recorded an Iron Fist recap, the series on Netflix. So that look for that sometime later this week on Post Show Recaps. And yeah, looking forward to getting into the finale with you guys.
All right, so looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody.